This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Events, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here is your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode numero cinco. Somebody learned their numbers in Spanish while they were gone. Of Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo, from the Place to Be Podcast and other assorted shows. And we have got a fantastic show for you again this week. But of course, I can't do it alone. Let me bring in the Core Four. Yes, they're all here this week. We'll begin with a guy who wasn't with us 2 weeks ago because he was too busy sticking a fork in Abdullah the Butcher's forehead during his stint in the WWC down in Puerto Rico. Mr. Steve Willie, welcome back.
Hola, ¿cómo estás, mis amigos?
You didn't find Bruiser Brody's ghost or anything, did you?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right, good, good. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Next up, the guy who wants to have a candy version of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal Trophy, the PTB original, Mr. Jordan Duncan. Do you want, like, caramel or peanut butter?
I've actually got great news. I've got a big announcement. All five of us will be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Yeah! Woohoo! Yes, along with a Big E who should be defending the Intercontinental title, but that's another thing that annoys me for another day. Jordan, good to have you back.
Thanks.
Also up is not only is he a contributor to Place to Be Nation, he is also the purveyor of Marvel.com, so Brad doesn't yell at me. And he also watches Total Divas. You can check out that awesome column he does with Jen Engel on PlaceToBeNation.com. He is also back from a trip. Sin City it is. He goes from Sin City to the Crescent City. Mr. Ben Steve Morse.
Big money, back in town, came up $60 up, very excited, successful trip. I missed you guys, I miss Aaron George now, but good to be back here on the show.
Yes.
Steve, like I'm glad you're back, buddy.
Thanks.
We'd like to thank Aaron George, by the way. Did a great job a couple weeks ago pinch hitting for you, Steve, and of course he'll be back in the future. Finally, Jesus Christ, you might as well just replace Rosero as being on all of my shows. He is the Bengal of the body. He now has... Oh, there's the heavy breathing. The Bengal of the Bayou.
It's like the Undertaker's gong.
Yes.
Yeah. Heavy breathing.
And he should have brackets stuck to him. Mr. Andrew Reich.
Well, we can forget the final four today because we got the core four. That's the only one that matters right now. So.
Not the core, but the core four because nobody cares about the core.
The core.
The core. Guys, it's great to have you all back together. We are, what? 19 days away from what did it say Monday night? 20. So this, as we're taping, this is what 18 days away from WrestleMania 30 down in Nolens. Mr. Reese,
now let's celebrate.
Mr. Reese will be there. Mr. Morse, you'll be there. A few other PTB members. Chad Campbell will be there, I believe, and a couple others as well. So we have a lot to talk about. It's been a couple weeks of shows. We'll talk about Raw and the network, SmackDown, NXT. I got a lot to talk about NXT because I'm enjoying the character building on NXT. Might be my favorite thing about the network so far, as we're almost a month old, right? Just under a month old. In fact, the free trial, which was a week, it's a long week, what planet are we on, expires Saturday at midnight. So I even noticed, I checked my account the other day, nobody's $10 came out yet, right? Has anybody's $10 come out yet?
I haven't noticed.
Right? So it's definitely been free.
I gotta ask my wife.
So it's definitely been free.
Yeah, I don't control the account either.
I just threw all the money in Sin City. I don't know what the hell I did, but
she lost more than I did.
Oh wow!
You're up 60. Yeah. That's your 6 months.
There you go.
I'm up 60. Right? She's down 60.
Oh no! So she's going to pay for the next 6 months. No. Yeah. So I guess I would guess that at some point next week, all of our $10 will come out. But doesn't matter. It's been awesome so far. So we'll talk about that, and I'll bring up the news and notes. Anything strikes our fancy, and kind of get ready for WrestleMania in 2 weeks. Our final show before WrestleMania, we'll have a special WrestleMania preview. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame. We had two new members to the class since we last spoke. One that was on SmackDown. That's another question. How do you feel about guys being announced on SmackDown? Are they like of lesser quality? You know, it's like, oh, he was announced on SmackDown. You know, so there was no real surprise. And then, of course, the one on Raw this week was already a surprise from TMZ, I think, broke it earlier in the day. So we'll get to that as well. All right. The last 2 weeks of Raw have been huge because finally, as we are under 4 weeks till WrestleMania, we finally have a semblance of a card that we didn't have when we last spoke. Let's talk about last Monday and the big segment that everyone talked about, the Yes Movement taking over the ring, taking over the ring apron, the side, the outside. Had to been, what was it, close to 200 people, although I think 175 of them were like catering and maintenance and ring crew
Rick,
and that kind
and
of
Rick
shit.
Ashberger, the super fan,
yeah,
of
exactly,
course.
Yeah, exactly, and Matt Rotella's cousin and all these other groups. I don't even know if he was there. I meant to ask him that. What'd you guys think? Let me start with you, Ben. What did you think of the segment as a whole? Did it serve its purpose? Obviously, to conclude, Daniel Bryan wanted what he wanted. He wanted his match with Triple H. Triple E finally got under the game skin, got his match with Triple H, and then said, well, since I am taking over this show, I'll take one more thing. If I beat you at WrestleMania, later in the night, I want to be in the WWE World Heavyweight title match with Batista and Randy Orton, and he got that as well. So there you go. There is your so pretty much finally everybody got what they wanted, and April 6th, Daniel Bryan will probably be holding up both belts. Ben, what did you think of the segment as a whole? Did it serve its purpose? Did it work? Did it not work? What did you think?
I thought it worked great, and two particular points stick out to me, both tying into the things you mentioned just now. Number one, the sheer visual, just because it's something we don't always see. It's like, take when Big Show and Brock broke the ring on SmackDown, or Austin with the beer truck. That's one for the highlight reels, right? It's something that visually is different, and it's a big deal. That's something they can show in highlight reels for years to come,
right,
for as long as Daniel Bryan is relevant. Mm-hmm. Just the image of him surrounded by this sea of people jumping out of the crowd. So that was cool. Just the fact that it was something different. It wasn't just him, Triple H, and Stephanie jawing at each other and him finally, you know, finding the right words to get under Triple H's skin. That was cool. Mm-hmm. Number two, exactly that, and exactly what you just mentioned, Scott, the fact that Triple H had a big part in making this segment work. He allowed himself, I think a lot of the criticism towards him since he's stepped into this role is he doesn't show enough ass, he doesn't let himself look foolish. He let himself look like a guy who's been driven up the wall here. Stephanie, lesser extent, we can talk more about her later and her role.
I have to talk about with her, yep.
Yeah, I think we all do. But Triple H, the visual, I just talked about visual, but the visual of him getting dragged off by the security guys as he's protesting like a little kid and just screaming and losing it, to me, that was the icing on the cake. You needed that to seal the deal. So the segment was a success on both sides. Bryan was great, the visual was great, and then Triple H really sealed it by actually making this guy seem like a credible threat, someone who can get under his skin and someone who can affect him. Because he hasn't been affected for months, and that was great.
JD, what do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it for a lot of the reasons Ben said. I think it's really important that that Bryan got the match out of Triple H rather than Triple H being the one to say, all right, let's have this match. I think that's a big deal. Just like Ben said, you know, Daniel's the one that got Triple H to crack rather than the opposite. Because really that's been the whole story, is that Triple H is trying to get trying to break Daniel Bryan, and in the end, Bryan gets Triple H to break. The only problem I had with it didn't last long because they fixed it the very next week. I didn't really like that they went right from the Triple H Bryan match to saying, oh, and also how about the title match? Because I thought that left nothing for the build. But then the opening segment from this past Raw, which I'm sure we'll talk about, really changed a lot of that up. And I don't have any problem with it now. I think it was a great segment overall.
Willie?
Oh, I completely agree, and I have the same thought about the visual as Ben. And the one question I have regarding that, the events that you mentioned, Ben, you know, happened years ago, and I have a dark spot of the late 2000s that I don't recall, but I can't think of a visual like that since that time period of the Attitude and like your Big Show, Brock Lesnar, It made Raw seem iconic for that moment again, something that we can remember and something that they just don't do as much, where you can, in the past few years, Raws can become unforgettable. There are great matches, but there's not that it moment that stands out that will stand the test of time.
Reesh?
Occupy Raw was probably my favorite segment that I've seen from Raw in the last, maybe. I love the Ascension ceremony that they had with the belts too, but this one was probably my favorite since SummerSlam. And the thing that made it really, really cool is the fact that you had a lot of plants, as they call them, in the ring, that were caterers and coworkers and such that were playing a role as part of the Yes movement. But the crowd being so behind Daniel Bryan almost made it feel like the entire ring was flooded with the people, even though the stands never moved and the chairs never shuffled. It felt like everybody was in there ganging up on Triple H and Stephanie. And Stephanie had her moment of insanity too, which was a little bit disturbing, but to go to Duncan's point and to Ben's point, it's what made it really cool is that it made Daniel Bryan for once in the storyline look cunning, because he was able to be the guy that made Triple H squirm and say, okay, I finally got the match that I want, but this is the match that I actually want. And it made Bryan look like a schemer when he's the guy who's been getting schemed from the very beginning. So it was a really important step in that angle. And even though they did rush the stipulation, like Jordan said, and it did seem a little bit, haphazard, mm-hmm. I think it was kind of cool, because it was the only way Daniel Bryan storyline wise would have been able to get away with it is by jamming it into Triple H's face, so that Triple H would give him what he wanted.
And to touch on rumors that were going around before, just to shoot it down, isn't this so much better than what people thought was going to happen when they thought Hogan was going to give him the match?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Wouldn't that have, like, cut off everything we're saying? We're saying, like, Bryan looks strong, Bryan looks cunning, Bryan got under Triple H's skin. Wouldn't it just have not worked at all if Hogan just walks out and just says, I'm the host of WrestleMania, I'm giving him this match? Because that's what everyone thought was going to happen, right?
Yep. It would have felt hammy. It would have felt a little bit cookie cutter.
It would have felt like, once again, Hogan comes back in here and has to stick his nose where it didn't belong. We'll talk about the Hogan host thing. I'll bring it up again next week 2 weeks on our special. I don't want Hogan to be like Rock at WrestleMania 27. I don't want him involved in matches. I don't want him. Obviously, that was leading towards Rock Cena. So I know it's a little different. Hogan's not expected to wrestle, but I don't want him involved in anything except smiling and starting the Battle Royal. That's all we need, and to sell T-shirts. That's all we need from him. So yeah. I agree with you guys, definitely, that if he got involved in any of this, it would have neutered. And then what, the Authority and Kane beat the shit out of Hogan? I mean, how stupid would that have looked? Because obviously there would have had to be repercussions if that's the evolution, no pun intended, of how the storyline goes. Because obviously there would have had to be repercussions if Hogan gave Daniel Bryan what he wanted. Obviously Stephanie and Hunter and Kane and whoever would have had to beat the shit out of him or something. And who the hell wants to see that? Right. So, but everything worked. I thought it worked. I'm trying to think of some other visuals. What about in 2000? When was Hunter the babyface COO and nobody had any faith in him and everybody was in the shower and walked out?
What was that phrase that they said? No confidence.
No confidence. That was like 2000.
That was 2011, right after Hell in a Cell.
Right after. That's right. When R-Truth and Miz broke into the cell and all that chaos and shit and Del Rio won the belt. That's right. So there was late 2011. It was after
There was the farewell to Ric Flair, which was cool.
Yeah, that was the that was the
night after WrestleMania 24.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a cool moment. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. That might still be my favorite Raw moment.
In this case, we're thinking of like population, where you see a lot of people, assembled into one place. And then there's also things like Ben was saying, where the ring breaks apart and the railings come apart, where it kind of is something that you don't normally see that kind of plays out. So. Right.
Well, I think also the big problem is they had a big iconic one that they think they were planning on using for years in 2004, but that got kind of swept off the decks. The end of WrestleMania 20.
Yeah. Yes, that was a great moment. I was there.
I think when the Nexus debuted was a pretty good one. And was that 09?
10.
That was 10. Yeah,
10.
That
was, yeah.
Oh, and they tore up the
arena. Daniel Bryan got fired. Yeah.
Yep.
But that was an awesome moment.
You know what's so awesome about that? Daniel Bryan screaming at John Cena, "You think you're better than me?"
Yeah.
They should use that. Should use it.
Seriously. Yeah.
This visual too. What was nice about it? Mm-hmm. Rish got me thinking about this. You know, a lot of people, and myself included, kind of mocking Triple H and Stephanie earlier on in 2013 for kind of playing the bully on Daniel Bryan, and everyone would say, like, oh, be a star, Triple H. Well, one way to combat a bully is you get your buddies, and Daniel Bryan got his buddies, the WWE Universe. He had everyone with him standing up to the bully, and not only did he get the bully to cave, but he one-upped the bully.
Right. It's like that great car commercial with the kids when they're assembling for the football game.
Yes.
That's kind of like what this was, only big wrestling people doing
you
it.
You know what I think was a nice touch to that, too, is like Steve said, it wasn't like indie guys in the ring. It was normal-looking people, in a way almost like nerdy-looking people.
Who was that black guy? Was he the cat caterer or something?
I don't know. He just kept taking pictures with his camera.
No,
there was a kid outside the ring in the front. There was old people, young people. It was a pretty cool, just a nice mixture of people instead of just your typical, clearly indie wrestlers showing off their tribal tattoos.
Oh, yeah. I would have to think some of them were Make-A-Wish kids.
I only saw one or two kids total, so I don't know.
From what I heard from a couple people, 170 of them, I think, were employees, and 30 people. Was it WrestleChat? It's either WrestleChat or PWO. One of the sites said that people were walking around, like WWE people were walking around the concourse, and anybody that had a Daniel Bryan T-shirt on got picked.
Wow.
And they picked up 25 or 30 people. So
that is awesome. Well, you remember when John Cena did the entrance of WrestleMania 25, because I was in Houston, where they had all the guys in the shirt, and they were doing the You Can't See Me. Three of those guys were in my hotel when we got home. And I asked, how did that happen? They said they just randomly found people right on the concourse, like you said.
Yeah. I remember being you could see the back of my head. The closest I ever came to being on TV, I know Justin always talks about when he had the Orioles hat on. I forgot which pay-per-view it was. I think it was King of the Ring 97. You could see me very, very faintly in the background going to the bathroom or going to get a beer. After Kurt Angle won the Intercontinental title from Jericho at No Way Out 2000 in Hartford, you could see me walking to get a beer because I didn't think he'd be there. And he ran out and the place went nuts. And then you see me kind of, let me have a Coors Light. It was like, so you could see very faintly in the background
We could talk about this later on with the network, but I think that's another reason why a lot of people watch the network if they were at any of these shows to try to find themselves.
Oh, yeah. I love finding Dave Meltzer on shows.
I think Steve's got one of his own. I have one in Slamboree 96 where I was touching Jimmy Hart's jacket and this security guard shoved me when I was like 14 years old.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm trying to – I know Steve was on an ECW show very prominently.
I've been on a couple of Raws.
Hardcore Heaven and I think there was an ECW DVD where I was getting almost into the only fight of my entire life on screen on the DVD because some guy was grabbing my wife and her friend.
Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah.
Was it a Dudley?
No, it was a fan, and we sicked Atlas Security on them. Those
I wish
huge.
It was awesome. I wish it was a Dudley.
Atlas Security. It's fucking clowns.
Yeah, it was not Xavier, though.
but I can't lie. I hit up Slamboree 96 on the network just because I wanted to see. I couldn't see myself though.
That's funny. We'll maybe talk about that later. Maybe we'll in the second half hour if we have some time. Maybe I'll go around and you guys can bring all of the pay per views you've ever been to. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting moments. All right. So everything's established. Fans can now stop pissing and moaning. We all got what we wanted.
Yeah, right.
that will never happen.
Well, they'll be pissing and moaning everywhere. Now, people still think something's going to happen. Do you think this is the end game now? Do you think they finally figured out? Because a great piece on Place to Be Nation about RVD screw up in 2001. And now, you know, this time they listened, and Daniel, although I think the situation in 2001 was a little different. The main eventers were in a different state, but that's a different debate. Mm-hmm. Here, obviously, it's pretty much set that everybody wants what they want, and that's 80,000 people at the Dome that night all chanting yes with their fingers pointing. The 80,000 people doing yes at the end, and him holding both belts, and Orton and Batista and Triple H crumpled up on the floor. Now, I felt like the heels the last few weeks have been very overshadowed. We really have not seen much going into this past week's Raw. We haven't seen much Batista or Orton, except for the match here and a little 2-second promo. Triple H has almost been the main adversary of Daniel Bryan, not Orton and Batista. They've almost been ancillary, and they're the ones with the belts. This past week, we finally saw some chops out of both of them, and I think it's the best they've looked since the Rumble. Mm-hmm. And now it's time for them to be established. Daniel Bryan's got the slot. Now it's time to go back to normal, straight-up, old-school WrestleMania booking and have the heels look great and have the face get the shit kicked out of them. No problem with what happened on Monday night. You can't have Daniel Bryan smile every week. That's just lame. And I thought the trickery of you guys aren't even real cops, which I thought was pretty funny. And then he beats the shit out of them, and I love the storylines. Of course, everybody didn't buy. If you saw a couple of websites, Daniel Bryan in storyline injured his shoulder, but everybody read it too fast. And yeah.
That's because Daniel Bryan is amazing at selling injuries.
Right. But the other thing was everybody thought it was so real that, of course, now everyone thought Triple H injured him on purpose and then could take him out of the mail. All these conspirators. I agree with you, JBL. Too many conspiracies.
There's a conspiracy about JBL, you know.
There is?
Yeah, he is the man behind at Cranky Vince on Twitter.
The other conspiracy
is. Did you see
the
report about that?
Yes.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, that makes me like him more if it's true. Yeah.
The other one is that he's a good wrestler.
Yeah, that conspiracy's been dispelled.
Look at SummerSlam
04. Don't tell partner in crime that one.
Yeah, those two matches against the Undertaker. But JR and I have always said that JBL didn't really. It's sad though because he didn't really hit his stride in the ring until almost the end of the run.
Yeah.
Those matches against the Undertaker were fucking terrible.
Like when JBL was looking at his network queue, like, look at me, all my matches. I was like, you're the only one who's doing that right now.
Well, except you, because you searched every noun, verb, and adjective on the planet. So, okay.
Except for JBL.
Except for JBL. Except you didn't look up JBL, Reesh?
No, but I did look up Jerry Flynn.
Because you're awesome. Because you're awesome.
Okay. How has the heels now looked? In the last 2 weeks of Raw, have the heels been positioned back to being relatively strong? Not Triple H, but obviously Randy Orton. And now Batista, who is almost like a rogue heel. Very different than Orton. Batista's like a rogue heel. No allegiances. He wants what he wants and fuck everybody. At this point, we'll start with you, Reesh. Do you think the heels now are repositioned as being stronger than Daniel Bryan? Now that we know that we're kind of happy Daniel Bryan got what he got. Are we happy now where the heels are? Have they been reestablished as strong?
Yeah, because there was so much uncertainty about what they were going to do with Daniel Bryan and if he was or was not going to be involved in the main event. Now that other shoe is finally dropped and we can kind of settle into a point where we can probably enjoy the match because of the fact that Bryan is there to kind of to keep it safe and to make the match good and memorable, we can kind of get more comfortable with what the heels and what their roles are. In the case of Orton, he's the classic heel in which he's the champion and he's the authority's kind of golden boy, and he has to be protected all the time, and he's trying everything he can to hold on to the belt regardless of how much help he gets. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Batista's more of a wild card, a guy who came back, the fans turn on him, and I think in the early going when they turned him heel, I don't think they were sure about how to fit him in. They were trying to make him out like a crony for Triple H. Mm-hmm. And I think they've kind of, with that promo you saw this Monday, they've kind of reverted back to Batista's kind of going his own route, and he doesn't exactly want to play along with Orton, so they're creating that tension between Orton and Batista that I think was really, really missing there. So it's working in a ways. The first thing I ever saw was on on Monday just passed was a graphic of Batista and Orton. And when you see that, you finally hit it in your head, like, mm-hmm. okay, this is really happening.
Right.
And that kind of sealed it for me. I feel better with what they have now. I didn't see the segment with Batista, so that they just had after the Daniel Bryan Randy Orton match. So somebody could probably elaborate on that. But it felt like Batista's kind of getting more comfortable in his role.
Hmm. Willie, what do you think?
Well, I was at that Green Bay show the night of Hogan's return and the launch of the network, and from what you had said at the beginning of the question, Scott, Randy Orton and Batista were an afterthought. He had that rematch with ADR, and they had a brief promo, and that was it for a four-hour show. They were out there for about 10 minutes total. Orton was out there for about a minute. So to see them on last Monday, or just, gosh, that's 2 days ago, I thought that was the best Batista's look, just standing in the ring, talking and interacting with Orton and Triple H, his backward somersault the other day notwithstanding. And Triple H even looked the best that he did in that opening segment. At first, I thought it was going pretty slow, and once he got on the ropes and really brought the emotion, calling out Orton's and Batista's, not their downfall, they're kind of their Achilles heel right now for their characters. Mm-hmm. Just that whole segment built up that main event, those three guys, more so than they have since the Rumble.
JD?
You know, you use the word strong, and I don't know that I'd say that they look strong because, I mean, Randy Orton still got beat by Daniel Bryan that same night. But I get what you're saying. I think they look better.
Yeah.
More important.
Stronger.
Yeah, strong. I mean, not strong as if anyone buys that either of them are going to win the match. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's not much they can do for that. So that they can play a part. And they have a defined role now. Rather than, hey, oh yeah, these two guys are fighting for the title at WrestleMania. Now we care about that. It's hard to describe. I don't know. I just don't want to use the word stronger because I think there's still zero chance that anyone thinks they're going to win the match. But they're finding their strengths, you know, specifically Batista. He didn't look like a total joke out there. And, you know, he had some good lines and, you know, they keep him very limited. He just basically hits a spear and not much else. And if that's what he does in the match, is just lay around and hit a couple big moves, he probably won't be too ineffective at least. So,
right,
better, not stronger. Mm-hmm. That would be my assessment.
Benjamin. There's the eternal pessimist in me, real quick. That yeah. you know, there's still that outside chance.
Yeah,
that's
what I wanted to say.
Chicanery, some real yeah. cheap victory for either Batista or Orton. I do think Bryan will win it at some point. I'm almost positive it will be at WrestleMania. But I can see them doing that just to, you know.
I wanted to say the same thing. I think there's still like a 30% chance Batista wins the title.
I don't think they'll end the show with it though. You want to blow that building? Then Reese, you better start your own Reese movement that night. Then.
Well, the position on the card will give it away. If it's not the last match, it'll pretty much give it away.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's good though. I mean, I think we're all like 99% sure Daniel Bryan's going to win, but the fact that there is that doubt, I think it's a good thing. It's the pleasant side effect of the fact that they screwed so many. That it's Triple H. There is the Triple H factor that you never know. He might put himself over. Yeah. But I think it's also the paranoia everyone has because they've been screwing Daniel Bryan over for so many months,
right.
Whether it was legit, whether this was the plan all along. I don't personally think this was the plan all along. But, you know, just the fact that we are uncertain, just the fact that they have done things like the Rumble, which at the time, you know, seemed horrible. But in retrospect, at the very least, it makes WrestleMania a little more interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because they might not listen to us. Who knows? They have shown in the past that they're capable of not doing it. So
yeah.
I think that's good. I wouldn't want to be 100% sure. This isn't, you know, it's not 1986 anymore. I don't want to be 100% sure that Hulk Hogan's going to retain the title. A little bit of doubt. But on the subject of heels, specifically Orton and Batista, I like the way you talked about it, Scott, as far as Batista's role as a rogue heel and how that contrasts to Orton, because I like that they're different. They're different. They're the two different type of bad guy archetypes almost. Batista is just that unstoppable monster who will run in the middle of the match, will leave the arena and then come back, will take someone out with his feel. He's the wild card. He could go crazy, and that's where he needs to be right now. Orton, I've actually really enjoyed the last few weeks because I like that he's the guy who's going there with Batista and saying, hey, the fans hate you. Like, everyone hates you, because to me it shows the side of, oh, all right, Orton knows this guy. He knows how to get under his skin. He knows how to manipulate him into being a little off kilter. I think you saw this Monday, you know, he's willing to make a deal with him, but then he's willing to screw him over. He's willing to RKO him. I just like that. I really, it feels like Orton's just been floating aimlessly since SummerSlam, just as like, you know, whiny this week, this, that week. I like that he's become kind of the mercenary, like, I'll do whatever it takes. I will sell out anybody, and I know how to play mind games with these guys. I think they're different kind of heels, and like Jordan was saying, or like Steve was saying, maybe not stronger, but definitely better.
Yeah, and like Ben was saying, I think having Bryan in that match, it helps Batista and Orton from a performance standpoint, because it really takes a lot of the pressure off, because if they had to go it alone, not only would people had not received the match well, obviously, but the match would have been probably average to below average. Now with Bryan there, they can take their liberties, and Orton does not have... We've already talked about Orton kind of having performance anxiety when it comes to big matches, and I think in this case, he's not going to feel it as much, and I think he'll be more comfortable having a good performance in a big-time match.
Right. Now, two questions I want to bring up to you guys after this past week's Raw, and we'll see how far we get with one question, and then we may carry over the second one to our next segment. During the Daniel Bryan-Randy Orton match, he was out at ringside beating him up with a kendo stick. He pulled a kendo stick. And off camera, you see him barking at somebody saying, ring the bell. There is no bell. It's no DQ. And he's pointing at somebody and barking at him. And then he throws him into the table and the match continues. Well, apparently, Orton was yelling at a fan who was saying something, I guess, disqualify him. Which, if you were paying attention, dumbass, it is no DQ. So the kid was stupid anyway, whoever the hell was yelling at him. Apparently, Orton got heat backstage for yelling at a fan. In normal circumstances, I can kind of agree with that. But, let's be honest, guys. In terms of heel versus babyface at this WrestleMania, sure, the faces of the feud are Daniel Bryan versus The Authority and Orton and Batista. But deep down, isn't really the feud between the WWE as a company and us? Aren't we the babyfaces, technically, because we, quote, are the ones that got them to do the switch? So technically, was Randy Orton wrong in kind of going along with the storyline? Hey, it's because of the fans that Daniel Bryan might get added to this match. You should be pissed off at them. And when I read that the backstage, he was getting heat for yelling at a fan, I'm like, well, why? Jordan, what do you think of that?
I'm totally agreeing with you on that, Scott. I thought it was awesome. I thought Randy Orton looked great when he did it. You can kind of tell it was just his natural reaction, but why not let him do that? I mean, he is a heel. He's supposed to yell at the fans and get under their skin. He's doing his job. If that's really a thing that he got some heat for it. First of all, did Batista get heat for flipping us off and basically going heel when he won the Royal Rumble? I mean,
well,
I don't remember hearing
about camera. That was really the difference. But I see what you're saying, though. Yeah.
But I thought it was awesome. And like you said, I mean, the whole story is the fans. You know, the fans don't want Randy Orton as a champ. Going back to the Royal Rumble again. I mean, look at how they responded in his match. It only makes sense with his character that he would snap on him. And I would prefer to see it more. In fact, you know, talking about Orton, it's weird because they just turned him heel. And
can we go to break?
Yeah. What I'm saying is this. We're gonna promote a WrestleMania that might have two Triple H matches, and we have a storyline where Triple H can't get through a match with Curtis Axel.
Oh, you know what? We're going to talk about that in the next segment.
Are we talking about anything but Triple H for the rest of the show?
Suckers! No, I'm just kidding. Quickly, him saying that he was going to add himself to the triple threat. Quickly, did that piss any of you off? Does anybody care? Was that just to kind of throw a red herring? Ben, what'd you think of that?
Yeah, it was a good move because it does add what I was talking about earlier, that minor, oh yeah, it's Triple H, he might screw him over. So that adds the right amount of disbelief to make things interesting.
Okay. JD, do you think he'll add himself in anyway? Does it become a fatal four-way?
No. I think he's going to lose.
No, but even if he loses, will he add himself in the title match anyway just to be a douche?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay. No. Reesh?
Oh, I'm the opposite of Ben. When I heard that stipulation get added in, I knew he was going to lose. Now I was absolutely certain. Before that, I thought, okay, he might win and they'll have Batista and Orton on second to last instead of last, and they'll just try to make it work. Now I know for sure that he's going to lose.
Right. Okay. Willie, what do you think? Do you care?
No, I didn't really care. I didn't even think it was one of the – and I'm – you know, Triple H, you mentioned with his snark, it is like the least subtle snark. He thinks he's being really sly about it.
Yeah.
It is so not subtle.
No.
But yeah, I have no problem with it.
Okay. I want to go on the record before we go to break. I did not mention Triple H's thighs, okay?
No,
I did not
mention
his thighs. You just talked about his chest hair.
Glistening,
The point of it is he's over the hill officially in terms of physically able to wrestle.
Right.
He's done.
Yeah. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see in a few weeks.
Yep. All right. We'll take a break and get out of the Triple H mode or anything involving anything.
Never.
T-shirts or whatever. When we come back, I have another deep question for the Core Four about heels. We'll also go over some news and notes, talk about the network, talk a little TNA. Wasn't there pay-per-view? Isn't there pay-per-view coming soon? Didn't it already happen? Tells you how out of the loop I am. I think Lockdown already happened, right? Was it last week? We'll have to talk about that. We'll talk a little TNA, Ring of Honor, of course, Kevin Kelly show going on as we speak as well, Oops. And a lot more. This is PTBN's main event. I'm Scott Criscola, Steve Willey, Ben Morse, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich. Back after this.
Por qué?
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, placetobenation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon, and the history of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFnews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world. And welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to PTBN's main event. I am Scott Criscolo, joined as always by the, well, not as always, but tonight by the full core four, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich, Ben Morse. Question number two that I wanted to give to you guys, by the way, well, let me do the PTPlaceToBeNation.com plug. I'm not used to doing that. Usually Mr. Rosero does that for me. But PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture, Raw reviews, main event, Impact, SmackDown, comics, music, Total Divas. I got to talk to you about that one day, Ben. I think a great storyline would be Cena and Nikki. Maybe they should feud. Is well, it Nikki that he's engaged to? Is it Brie? I don't know the fucking difference.
He'd have to be a babyface for once.
I will say this. The one thing I thought about, because I don't know if we're going to get to it or not, but something that's been coming up on the boards a lot is various people saying the frustrating thing is that there's no way Daniel Bryan can get his revenge on Stephanie McMahon. And as much as you guys would probably hate it, there is someone on the roster established as being, you know, with Daniel Bryan, who could very easily during the WrestleMania match, if Stephanie McMahon is interfering, come down and beat the crap out of Stephanie. It would be a great moment. And that's Brie Bella.
Hmm.
It's a way to do it. I mean, she's a diva. And true. They're allowed to beat on Stephanie. So I'm surprised it hasn't come up. Maybe it's because no one but me wants to see it. But every time they say there's no way for Daniel Bryan to get any revenge on Stephanie for being such a bitch, I'm like, you know what? There actually kind of is by proxy. I don't know.
It's entirely possible. But anyway, you can listen to – you can read Ben and Jen do their Total Divas recap. Season started, right? What was it, last week? Week before?
Yeah, it's a little late this week because I was in Vegas. I watched it with my wife and my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law, but I haven't had a chance to write mine up yet. We'll have it out before this week's episode, but it's running a little late this week. But yes, it's back. It's great. Scott, I know it's on your DVR, so we'll talk about it after you catch it later.
I'm surprised they haven't put it on I don't know if will USA allow them to put it on the network. I don't know.
It's on E. I think they have a deal with E for a certain amount of time. I think it'll eventually.
I mean E, not USA. I meant E. You're right. So all right. Anyway, PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Okay. My second question is, and you brought her up, Ben, and you can actually start the discussion. Of all of the heels that are against Daniel Bryan, Daniel Bryan has this. Inner sanctum of people that want to take him out. Is Stephanie the best heel of the bunch? Is she the one with the most heat? And is that sad? I'll start with you, Ben.
Well, I mean, Stephanie's always been a heat magnet, so this isn't shocking. I mean, whenever she's been a heel, think back to like 01 and when she was with Triple H the first time around. She's always been able to get tremendous amounts of heel heat, so mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that she has a lot of heat. Is she the one with the most heat? Maybe. I still think it's her and Triple H collectively, but I think the crowd is a little more annoyed by her. I think it goes back to what we were just talking about. I think the fact that she is so untouchable makes her more hateable. And I also think it's the fact that she's constantly putting herself over at other people's expense, whether it's, you know, when she was doing an interview with Dusty Rhodes, back at last summer when she put herself over the entire Divas division when she was still a babyface.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of heat. I don't think it's a bad thing. If she gets her comeuppance, whether it's in the way we just discussed or just that Daniel Bryan winning just drives her so insane that she can't handle it. But yeah, I want to hear what the other guys say about this.
GD.
I need to preface this by saying that corporate Stephanie is my least favorite character, maybe in the history of professional wrestling. I can't answer this objectively. I hate everything about her.
Mm-hmm. Has it gotten worse as the voice has deepened?
Yes. I know. I hate seeing her on screen. I don't think she's particularly good. I think she's like a more amped up version of Vicky Guerrero, really. I mean, you know, Vicky gets nuclear heat too, but does it really ever go anywhere? I mean,
well, Vicky's willing to look like a fool at the drop of a hat, right, though.
And I think Stephanie's different. Comeuppance is coming, and they're hinting at it with her saying things like, this is my ring. This is mine, mine, mine. And JBL's been talking about someone's pulling the strings for Brian. I think Vince is going to come back, and Vince is going to be the one to put her in her place. Maybe that'll end the authority storyline. Maybe, you know, they'll kick her to the curb or something. But I think they do have something planned, but it can't be physical. And, you know, I would personally love to see, you know, a runny knee to the head of Stephanie later out in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
I know they're not going to do that. I wish she'd just go away. Everything that was good about Monday night could have been done without her. So I think she's just kind of glomming on to the most popular act in the company. I hate her.
What do you think, Willie?
I would say that overall, that, you know, to get back to the original question, the top heel is Triple H in this, as the head of the authority. Stephanie is just, she is grating, and it's not like it's cringeworthy. Like, I don't want to watch her on TV.
Right.
Though maybe I'm wrong, because I do kind of want to see her get dumped on her head. And I wonder why she can't get her physical comeuppance. I don't know. Like, I know it's PG, but Maria in Ring of Honor, she does it all the time. They're also rated PG. Mm-hmm. She took a package pile driver from Kevin Steen, and she's probably less trained than Stephanie McMahon is.
Right.
So, like, why couldn't she get kicked?
And she's in good shape.
Yeah,
she's a wrestler. Take a shot better than a
or RKO'd, or Batista bombed, or all of the above in the same night.
Succession? Did she get RKO'd?
Instead, she gets bumped into by accident, and all of a sudden, everybody's sad.
Didn't she get RKO'd, or was it punted in the head?
I thought she got DDT.
It was both.
Drop DDT. That's right.
It was both. She was RKO'd right after No Way Out, and then leading up to WrestleMania, they DDT'd her, and then they kissed her unconscious face.
Were they PG at that point, though?
Yes. They were working out.
And
the
by the way, that got one of the biggest babyface reactions of Randy Orton's career.
Yes.
Yeah. It did. That is true. It did.
And if it is PG and you can kiss an unconscious woman on the lips, then you can, like, put her in the yes lock.
With a guy handcuffed.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
I mean, they do that.
Her husband pedigreed her.
They do that in Snow White. That's G.
Reesh, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, Jordan kind of touched on it with the whole idea that the power is getting to Stephanie and Triple H's head, and I think that's kind of where the direction is at, is definitely going there. I could kind of get that tea leaf from when Triple H says to Orton and Batista, the old man was right, which is kind of like a little bit of a backhanded compliment. Like, oh man, this guy Vince, who thinks he's a genius, you know, maybe he wasn't an old, stupid, crazy old man, but, you know, when in the case of Stephanie, you know, Ben said the point, Jordan said the point, I agree with all three of them. In the case of Stephanie, when she first started in a line with Triple H, she was willing to look stupid and take the fall and kind of forsake herself for the sake of the character and the storyline, and like we always say with Triple H, at least play along, at least play the fool, at least play the dancing fool for at least once, you know. And even when Stephanie was doing that yelling fit, where it was supposed to be where Stephanie has just lost her mind and she's starting to give back to Daniel Bryan some of the power and ceding away some power, all it was Stephanie just making a statement saying, you know, fuck you, CM Punk, and I'm going to be Vince McMahon's successor, and there's nothing you can do about it. So the fact that she's so untouchable doesn't make her the best heel. It makes her the most polarizing one, because the crowd just absolutely can't stand her. And the moment she even starts talking, they just start booing the hell out of her. I remember when Triple H said to Daniel Bryan, says, you know, I'm pretty convinced she can kick your ass. And when Daniel Bryan gets held up by Triple H in the segment that just passed and Stephanie slaps him, you can hear Bryan just wake up and go, you hit like a girl. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, that's Bryan saying, you know what, you're not so tough after all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a cool thing. What I don't want to see, I don't want to see Stephanie on a split screen or what the hell ever.
Yeah.
In WrestleMania, like, remember when Diana did that on, in your house with Brett and the Bulldog? Mm-hmm. Come on, Davey. Come on. I do not want to see that at WrestleMania.
Do you think WrestleMania is close? Do you think it's too late to start an angle where Brie Bella is put into a coma? And then they wheel her out at WrestleMania.
She gets
only to have her rise at the last moment.
I'm of the proponent. They should have had Nikki kidnapped by the Wyatts and really make that crazy and swanky. I thought that would have been great.
And Cena would have been like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
kind of like he is in the relationship.
Knock the other one out.
All right. Okay, we'll talk more about this storyline in 2 weeks when we have our big WrestleMania preview. Let's talk about the two of the other big feuds leading to WrestleMania. And just want your guys' general opinions on the build so far. What do you guys think of Cena and Bray Wyatt so far? Do you think the build's been good? Do you think it's been flat? What do you think? Let me think. Willie, you go first. What do you think of this feud so far?
I kind of like anything the Wyatts do, except, you know, Bray still needs some work in the ring. But anytime they come on the screen, I usually, if I'm watching Raw, I watch it on the DVR and maybe skip through some of the little interview segments and stuff like that. Anytime I see them, I stop because I want to see what he has to say. Right. He has a way about him where you're like, you really have to pay attention to what he's saying and think. And I love that. I think CM Punk said this during like the pipe bomb era. I don't know if this was in an interview or on screen, that he wants the fans to think he doesn't want it to be all cookie cutter. Like, I want to be, you know, challenged once in a while intelligently by watching my show. And he, Bray Wyatt's promos do that. John Cena was a little odd, like I thought, on Monday with, like, guys, hey, fans, come here. You know, the all these other guys I faced, you know, they were athletic, but Bray Wyatt, he just doesn't care, guys. It's a little, you know, cheesy. Usually he's cheesy in a goofy way, so it's like, you know, he doesn't have the acting chops to pull that kind of stuff off.
Yeah.
Okay. Reesh, what do you think?
Well, like Steve said, just to kind of end that statement, Cena cannot sell trepidation. He can't sell that sense of – the only time he really did it was with The Rock, where he really had to get serious because, you know, his spot in the company was challenged because they had somebody coming back and kind of taking it away from him. And that was the only time I really ever felt with John Cena, like, okay, it's time to fight back. It's time to show that I am the big shit here. With Bray Wyatt, you know, he's been pretty goofy and weird. He did the Hogan one that I really just – could not. That whole two segment thing they did was just so unbearably bad. But with Bray Wyatt, the thing with Bray Wyatt is that a lot of his promos in the beginning were such, all of it's mumbo jumbo, a lot of it's kind of rhetorical nonsense at first. But the thing about John Cena is that it gives him a guy that you can definitely use and antagonize against as the machine and say down with the machine, and it works much better. And I think it's made Bray Wyatt's promos way more effective and influential. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say they're getting behind Bray Wyatt per se, because I think Bray Wyatt is still a hateable heel in a good way. Right. But it does feel a little bit like, you know, John Cena is kind of losing the crowd here, and Bray Wyatt might get a little bit of face heat. I do think the match will be very good, and I think that the build-up has been solid, but I think it's been a little bit mishandled.
Okay. Ben Steve.
That's me, right?
That is
okay. Good.
I don't call Willie Steve Ben, so.
Oh, we got to start that.
There's.
I'm gonna go against everyone else a little bit here. As I think I feel like I do a lot when it comes to Cena. I've actually been a fan of Cena's work in this feud. Not 100%, but I think he's taking it more seriously than he has other past ones on the microphone. Mm-hmm. I do think he's selling the sense that he feels threatened. I like the angle of him saying, you know, I'm the veteran here, and no one is getting over unless they beat me. I think that's a new facet for him.
Right.
And I think it's good because it allows him to be a little more serious and intense. Mm-hmm. Bray Wyatt's promos, just like Rush said, I love Bray Wyatt's promos, but the thing that frustrates me sometimes, and it might be what makes them good, so I got to tread lightly here, but I do wish sometimes they would let him just, or the announcers or someone would just come out and say, this is what he means, and not leave it up to us.
Mm-hmm. There's like, no thesis.
In this set, like, there have been times in the past where, like, when he was feuding with Daniel Bryan, when he was feuding with Kane, you could work out what he was saying. Or even when they were feuding with The Shield, you could work out that he's like, okay, you guys are the authority's bitches. We hate authority. We're going to fight you. But he never actually said it. With Cena, it's the closest he's come to just saying exactly what Rish was saying. That it's like, Cena, you are the man. We hate the man. Like, we don't like that you pretend to be this virtuous, amazing, good guy when you can't possibly be that. And that's an effective promo. Like, he should just come out and say that. And I get that he can't because of his character, but it's almost too obtuse sometimes. It's like, and that's why the feud hasn't really clicked for me, because I feel like, yeah, what Andrew just said about the thesis, they're dancing around it, but they're not saying it. I wish they would just come out and say, this is why Bray Wyatt hates John Cena, and John Cena has to defend himself. It's too much just Bray Wyatt's going to do a bunch of crazy promos, and we like Bray Wyatt's crazy promos, and John Cena's scared, and then they're going to have a match, and great. I just wish the motivation was more just out there, just laid on the table. Mm-hmm.
JD? That's exactly why I do like it, just because it is different, mm-hmm. where I, as the viewer, need to try to figure out that motivation. Everything else is just... it's just spelled out over and over and over again, you know, 2-3 times in a match, yeah. by Michael Cole telling you, this is what you're doing, this is what they're doing. Well, you know, for once, hey, I could try to figure it out myself and see, is he trying to get the fans on his side, Bray Wyatt? You know, he's, you know, from the beginning, the NXT character, and when he came up, he's, you know, this cult character, like Philip Seymour Hoffman and the Master. You know, like, is that the motivation? Is there something else for a while? Or is the question, you know, is he with the authority in a way? And so I do like that.
I liked it for a time, but I'm just like, it was the same way with The Shield, where they just kept, and it was, if you really want to go back, it was the same way with the Nexus. I'm just kind of sick of them dragging out these, we have these super groups, and they have a purpose, but we're not going to tell you just now. We're going to drag it out, and it's really vague. But seriously, like, there is a master plan at work here, and we just never get there. You know?
Yeah.
I like them being vague for the first little bit and being mysterious and leaving it up to you to kind of guess. But at the end of the day, you know, that's what made, like, the Corporation or the NWO or the Horsemen or anything else. At the end of the day, you knew what the Horsemen's goal was. They want all the belts. They want to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You do something – the Wyatts are cool – but I do want to know why they're doing this.
They're rebels without a cause.
Yeah, and that's perfect, and that's fine. But just, like, yeah, I don't know. It just and it bugged me with The Shield, too, because The Shield is fine now. They're just an awesome, badass supergroup. But remember, they just kept teasing, like, you know, we have a greater purpose.
Yes.
We're serving a greater master.
And they just forget those things.
Yeah, and then it just wasted away. And I feel like sometimes the Wyatts are the danger. It works a little better with their characters.
Right.
But it's still, I don't know, something just sticks about it for me.
Yeah.
JD,
well, they call. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I gotta point out that Andrew Reich says he's worried that Bray Wyatt may get a little bit of a face reaction in a match against John Cena at WrestleMania. I'm going to guess a WrestleMania crowd's going to give more than a little bit of a face reaction against John Cena.
But that's where the big boot gets dropped, brother.
Because Rich thinks he has nice thighs.
That's
maybe.
Listening.
I generally agree with you, Ben. I think we're on total different pages here. I think Bray Wyatt right now is the best promo in wrestling, and that includes Paul Heyman. Like Steve said, when he's on screen, I want to listen to what he says. And I think it's because it's not spelled out for us, where everything else is almost hammered over our heads over and over and over again. I like that we got to figure it out. And I think it fits the character a little bit, too. He's a backwoods cult leader. And what's a cult leader? But really a big phony himself. And so, you know, if they want to go that way with the character, he can not really come out and say his motivations, because then when his motivations are challenged, he can say, well, I didn't say that. Mm-hmm. That's not what they've done with it, but that's what fit a character of a cult leader. Mm-hmm. my issue with Cena, and I think Cena's done a pretty good job. You know, he can talk when he wants to. He got a little jokey with it, and I think there was a promo where Wyatt almost called him out on it a little bit, said you're not taking this seriously enough.
He did, yeah.
The thing I don't like about Cena, and it's not Cena, and this is not a thing specific to Cena. I think we've talked about this maybe on our first show. Is a problem with the company as sweeping winds appear to be taking over somewhere. Is a lot of times the company will say how a guy is feeling rather than have him act that way. And with a Cena promo, he'll come out, he'll say, guys, I'm scared. But he doesn't act scared, you know? And I think a lot of times the announcers will play that up, but it doesn't show in his actions. It doesn't show in how he wrestles. And so far with me, all Cena's really doing is saying I'm feeling this way, but he hasn't really changed it. I'd like to see Cena respond in a different way rather than just say, this right. is different, you guys. Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah.
Before we get out of the segment, I do want to say I am a big fan of Bray Wyatt's promos. I don't want it to be like he's a bad promo. It's more just the character and the direction. I think he's great, though. I think he's fantastic on the mic.
I get what you're saying, too. I get what you're saying. It just doesn't really bother me, I don't think.
I hear you.
And the other thing about those promos that you've been seeing week to week a little more and more, a lot more of Luke Harper.
Yep, doing I was just going to say that.
Yeah, he's been talking a little bit more.
He's like the voice of reason. Yeah, he's like the voice of reason. He's like, John, why are you doing this? It's so cool.
And, you know, I don't know if we said this maybe on the last show, but he comes off creepier than Wyatt does.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
In three sentences.
He has an aura about him.
When you have a guy in a sheet mask and he's the least creepiest guy, that's a creepy fucking group. Unless you're Jordan, and that's totally
fine.
Knock
the sheet mask, buddy.
I'm waiting to see Rowan talk and sound like Brie Bella.
Or like Suburban Commando.
Yes.
When the Undertaker finally speaks.
I was frozen today. Okay. Let's talk about the other major storyline heading into WrestleMania, and that is, of course, Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. Of course, the way the Undertaker storylines go, like, one week he's not there, so the heel gets his stage, and then Taker will be back, and he gets his, and go back and forth. Taker was on Main Event this week, which is cool. Works for the network, obviously, to being alive, and he responded to Heyman's promo on Monday. Rish, we'll start with you. What do you think of the build for this feud so far? And should Taker have to be on every week? And maybe not necessarily wrestle, but I don't know. Maybe he should wrestle. Maybe not. I don't know. What do you think of the build to this feud so far, heading to April 6th?
Last year when he feuded with Punk, I'm almost sure that maybe outside of 1 week that Taker was on Raw for every single week leading up to WrestleMania 29 because they were doing the whole storyline with the urn and him trying to chase him to get the urn back. And it worked, and it kind of built up that match a little bit better than I thought initially it was going to be when they had first announced it. In the case of Brock and The Undertaker, they kind of like they started out big, you know. Brock Lesnar gets the chokeslam in the table, stabs him with the pen, so you got all the stock footage all ready for your feud to build it up. The one thing that they have this year, and they added last year in a little bit, but Punk was such a good talking head that they didn't really need him as much, but Paul Heyman is so amazing as a microphone man that he could basically carry the segment on his own and build up this match like the salesman that he is and make you really want to watch it. I think what's really hurting is not necessarily the absence of The Undertaker, because The Undertaker was just recently on Main Event. I think it's the absence of Brock Lesnar. I think Lesnar has been there one time since the chokeslam. He talked alone with Paul. It was a slightly unconvincing promo, if you ask me, and I think they need to have some more face-to-face. I think that would really, really help, and I think that's what we're headed for next week. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think a little bit more back and forth, maybe a little bit fighting, I think that could have helped. But, you know, there's that school of thought of keep them away from each other so that when they clash, it feels like the first time again, and people will be more be anticipating it more. So Paul Heyman being so great on the microphone has saved it. If he had not been there, then this really would have suffered and people would not have been as interested.
Right. JD, what do you think?
I'm glad you didn't go with me first because I'm not really into this. You know, and having said that, I want to see the match. I'm into the match. I think it's going to be an awesome match. But Am I crazy for thinking it's a match that doesn't really need a story? I mean, it just, hey, Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, that's going to be a freaking awesome match. And I think you could sell it on that. That's enough for me. I get what you're saying, but I don't know what they could do to make me interested in the outcome of the match, because I think the outcome of the match is the one thing they everybody knows, even more so than any other match on the show. I think they should maybe sell up the quality of the match and what type of match it's going to be and how brutal it's going to be, and can Undertaker survive the beating type thing. You know, is this going to be his last match? Will Brock retire him here, win or lose? I think that might be, and maybe you could even go back and kind of copy the Rock and Brock formula from 2002 and just show Brock training and training and training, just show what a monster he is, and maybe even to contrast that, show Undertaker rehabbing and just show his age and show that he's weary and, you know, just... Because I don't think you can sell Brock could win. No one's going to buy that. But I think you could sell Brock could end The Undertaker's career.
Well, Jordan, what if they had it where Brock, after the autograph, the contract signing, I'm sorry, what if they had a segment where Brock had beaten the hell out of The Undertaker and he had to go into hiding for a little while to lick his wound?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah, you know, and show it. Show him at home. Show him rehabbing slow. Show him moving slow. Show him probably what he's doing in real life. Show him slow to get up from the couch, you know?
Yeah.
And just put that, he's an old man in our mind.
Yeah.
Not like we were 2000 slow getting off the couch where damn it, more nachos.
And we were talking a little bit too deeply about Triple H looking old. The Undertaker looks.
He looks Brock Lesnar's thighs. I am hanging up on you.
The Undertaker looks straight up elderly. When I was watching the main event, it was such a hammy promo.
I thought he looked better on main event than the first night he came back.
Yeah, but the night he came back, he looked emaciated.
Yeah. the delivery of that promo, not the best. It was like, I am going to put him into the fiery pits of hell, like I always do. He sounded like Mike from Breaking Bad. Who's also on Community.
Yeah.
Willie, your thoughts?
Well, I'm also glad that you didn't take me first, because you said the third big feud, and I gasped, because I was not much of a diehard WWE fan. I didn't know what it was. And it's like, oh, okay, Undertaker, Brock Lesnar. Okay, I can figure it. So that says something right there, I guess, that it's not on the forefront of my mind. Mm-hmm. I agree with Jordan completely. I think it's going to be a great match. We know The Undertaker is going to win. And sell it on you don't even need Taker and Lesnar there. You could show highlights of his last two matches, show how miserable he was walking out of those two matches, and how you didn't really see Undertaker for a long time because he'll need to recover. And if Triple H and CM Punk did that to him, imagine what, you know, Brock Lesnar would do to them. Is this the end of his career? And to be honest, I hope this is it. I hope this is the last one. You know,
it won't.
I know it won't be.
Because there's one more guy he'll need to face.
Right. I can think of two.
Fandango.
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 Well, it's to the point for me where, like, okay, we know it's going to happen.
Right.
You know, I don't need to see an Undertaker Cena match. I'm assuming that's where you're going.
No, that's one. Somebody said two.
Sting. Sting was the other one. That's the rumor. Is this? Yeah. I don't really want to see that either. But
Necro Butcher,
Leatherface.
Jordan? Did you see the Sting one just to troll me right there? Because you know how I feel about that one.
Well, no. I mean that's the one that's rumored for years and years and years.
What about the return of Arachnaman?
Yes,
the dupes, the ding dongs. Do the tag strap, ding dongs.
I guess I can hear Vince in the meetings. We need more creatures in the night.
We need ding dongs. Where's that guy, the zombie from the first episode of ECW? Whatever happened to that guy? All right, who did I not get to? Ben, Steve, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I've been thinking the whole time now about Jordan's idea of just showing a montage of Undertaker getting up and off the couch to set to Creed. That's in my sacrifice.
In a rascal at a grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle McCool bringing him a Schlitz.
Yeah. Just him doing old man stuff with a blast in the background.
Hanging out at Booker T's house.
Yeah. No, but, you know, Steve made a good point there. I really wish they had focused more on this could be the end of his career angle of it, because it goes back to what I was talking about with CNN Wyatt. The problem for me with this feud is it's not no motivation, it's the motivation. I hate that what set up the feud was Brock Lesnar wanting a shot at the title and not getting it, so this was his consolation prize. Because it was the same thing as last year when Punk wanted a shot at the title and he didn't get it, so he said, well, if I can't get the title, I guess I'll wrestle The Undertaker. So it just feels so unimportant. There's so many different ways they could have gone with it. I love what Heyman's been doing. First, when he said, like Heyman's, like Rhys said, he's been trying to single-handedly drag this feud to WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And he had two great approaches. The first one being on the Chicago Raw, where he said, you know what? Undertaker destroyed CM Punk, so now Brock Lesnar is going to destroy The Undertaker. That would have been great. That's great motivation. Paul Heyman just being like, you know, I'm pissed off that this guy ruined my last year, so I'm going to have Brock go after him. And I think you just do that. Skip the contract signing and all that open challenge BS. Or you go the route of, you know, Brock Lesnar has beaten what they did this past Monday. They said he's beaten the crap out of all the guys who Undertaker has barely beaten. That's another good angle to go. And I can't for the life of me understand why they won't bring up the fact that Undertaker has never beaten Brock. I know they're afraid of history sometimes, but for Christ's sakes, you got the network. Have everything else. Just bring up the fact that these guys wrestled 10 years ago, and Brock Lesnar destroyed him every time. Mm-hmm. One-on-one. Hell in a Cell. Chain matches. Undertaker can't beat this guy.
I don't know, Ben. We could just keep talking you behind and you have your own My Sacrifice promo.
Yeah, I know.
I just had this attitude.
Yeah.
I just had an alliance flashback and I got scared.
I'm just thinking of Michelle McCooler telling him to use a coaster.
That's what I was thinking of. Like a slow motion while Scott Stapp singing of a Schlitz can coming across the camera or whatever.
Trying to get off my couch, but I can't do it.
My saggy thighs.
Oh, God. That's funny.
To add to what Ben said, too, though, right from the start they got this wrong, because if you remember how this match came about was Brock said, I'm not fighting anyone at WrestleMania. Right. And Undertaker came out and challenged him.
He literally shrugged. He literally shrugged in the ring. Oh, well. And then here goes, why, give him, and like Ben said, give them a cause. Give them a reason why he's got a big, giant beef with The Undertaker. Have him cost Brock Lesnar a match. Have him just, I don't know, interfere in a match where Brock Lesnar could have won the championship. I don't know. Just do something.
Denigrate Jimmy Johns.
Yeah.
Beat him in the face with a steak and cheese. All right. We'll talk more about this feud in 2 weeks with our WrestleMania preview and the other feuds as well, and the Andre Battle Royal, the Jordan Duncan Candy Trophy Battle Royal. And
My hope there is that the Andre Trophy is actually like a Russian nesting doll. You open it up, and there's like a big John stud inside. Then you open that up, and there's like someone smaller.
I thought you were opening it up, and Andre would come out and
I still haven't opened a petition that they call it the Bad News Brown Bat.
Well, that's what I said. I wish he was still alive. He could come out and then just destroy it. Or ghetto blast the winner. That would be awesome.
Bad News Barrett can do it.
We'll talk more about that in 2 weeks. We'll get more into the feuds and as we get closer to WrestleMania 30 on April 6th in Nolens at the Dome. Let's get into a little some news. We got some time. Let's get into some news and notes because some interesting things came out today. We talked about the Hall of Fame. Two new people have been added. Of course, last week it was announced that Carlos Colon. Didn't you make that announcement, Willie, while you were down there? You announced that Carlos Colon is in the Hall of Fame.
I saw him at a Subway.
Yes.
He's inducted too.
That's where he's working now because the company.
The young up-and-comer.
Yeah, up in the stinker.
And it was the same way Triple H had to go and court Bruno to get him to join the Hall of Fame. They sent Steve to go and convince Carlos. It just wasn't as hard.
Yes.
Is he going to be inducted by Invader number 3?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Or the guy who killed Bruiser. No, never mind. All right. So, and then this past Monday, of course, it was announced that that Mr. T will be going in as the. So, which means every single piece of the WrestleMania 1 main event, sans both Billy Martin and Muhammad Ali. I'm surprised Muhammad Ali's not in the Hall of Fame. That's kind of weird.
And Liberace.
I don't know if he'll ever go in. will not go in, but everybody else is in. Okay. This is from our good friends at WrestleChat.net. WWE, this doesn't surprise me either.
WWE inducting Carlos Colon into the Hall of Fame this year has to do with the network expansion. With WWE expanding the network internationally next year, they are in need of Spanish language programming and are preparing to purchase the World Wrestling Council tape collection from Puerto Rico. I didn't think they had one.
Oh, wow.
It's said that WWC is interested in selling their tapes as a way of raising money because Steve Willey's $5 he left at the desk was not good enough. They were apparently close to folding several years ago and wouldn't sell the tapes. Cologne's induction is said to be part of the deal. Imagine that. You for tapes.
Well,
how sad is that?
That does not surprise me because that was supposedly part of the deal with Bill Watts and Kevin Von Erich.
Well, Bill Watts
and Vern Gagne.
Bill Watts's tapes. Well, Vern is 100 years old. And Watts' problem was his wife had the tapes in their divorce or whatever. That had nothing to do with Watts.
And they were running it through – and they were running the damn library through this GeoCities site that looked like it was built by a third grader.
Yes, that is true. So there you go. So that's there's the story there on why Carlos Colon's inducted, which is kind of sad. Here's an interesting
thing. I'm actually kind of excited about that because I've heard good things about WWE.
First off, WWC – I've only seen in my life, I don't know about you guys, I've only seen in my life two Abdul the – we were goofing about it with you, Willie, but two Abdul the Butcher, Carlos Colon matches. I've seen – there's one on – I think it's the Steel Cage set, and there's one somewhere else. I think it's – what was it, Starrcade 83 or 84? But their matches down there – let me tell you something. Eddie's blade job at Judgment Day 04 is like a paper cut compared to what those two did the fuck to each other down there. I mean, we're talking hatchets and fucking, you know, machetes and Jesus knows what else. I mean, it was brutal,
and
those fights.
And
down
and they've been around well past the 80s. A guy who basically got his start down there for a long time was Chris Jericho.
Well, the feud's 30 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, the feud's 30 years old. All right, this just came up moments ago. So this is breaking news on WrestleChat.net. Your thoughts? We're just a few weeks away from WrestleMania 30. Much of the card is still up in the air, looking like WrestleMania being an 8-man match over 4 hours. Coming out of the SmackDown tapings, it appears the Usos will be defending the WWE Tag Team titles against both the Real Americans and Rybacksel. This would mean that Axel and Ryback are removed from the Battle Royal, making it 12 spots that are open now. At one point, based on a German TV promo that aired, Cesaro was scheduled for the Battle Royal, but that doesn't appear to be the case now. Also on the schedule is a 6-man match where The Shield will take on Kane and the New Age Outlaws. Tag team plans for WrestleMania have gone back and forth this year, but it says the New Age Outlaws wanted to work with The Shield before the team breaks up, so the card was slightly changed. At this point, the Battle Royal will have Big E, Big Show, Miz, Sheamus, Titus O'Neil, Alberto Del Rio, Jordan Duncan, Rey Mysterio, Kofi Kingston, Fandango, Thigh-dango, Mark Henry, Damian Sandow, Cody Rhodes, Goldust, Dolph Ziggler, Christian, Heath Slater, Jinder Mahal. Jesus, 3MB? I need three stiffs to get thrown out early. As of last week, Eric Rowan and Luke Harper were scheduled to work with The Shield, but that's likely changed with the new 6-man. There's talk that Rowan and Harper may only end up seconding, of course, Bray Wyatt in their match, or they may be added to the Battle Royal. So nothing earth-shattering there. I don't know, that 6-man seems kind of cool.
You know, I'm not a – I know Jordan's not a fan of it, but the only thing I really like about Kane and the Outlaws facing The Shield is that The Shield were basically turning face anyway after feuding with the Wyatts, and they have all – and like Ben said, they never really had a reasoning for being the Hounds of Justice and trying to correct injustice in the WWE. Well, now they have a reason, because they have an authority figure in Kane trying to get these two Johnny Come Latelys to come out and just try to take down The Shield. So it gives The Shield a reason to inject justice into the authority, which I think is cool.
Except they were fine with it for 8 months.
Yeah.
Very bad. It's bad flip-flop booking. That's true. But that's WWE.
I'm all about the Shield face turn. I think it's great. I like the reaction. It's going to be brief probably anyways because they're probably going to split or someone's going to turn heel. What I don't get is, all right, they're feuding with Kane. Kane's a monster. Good start. If he needs backup against the most brutal, ruthless, dominant faction in the last, 5 years, why would he say, all right, I can literally pick anyone. I can pick the Wyatts who have their number. I can bring up someone from NXT. I can, you know, pick any number of badass teams. I'm going to go with the guys over 40 who have been involved in comedy segments with Betty White.
Because
makes no sense. Right. And if they want to work with them, great. But it just doesn't work. I don't like that.
Okay.
It feels a little
bit
like
the Outlaws.
It feels a little bit like when X-Pac and the Road Dogg were feuding with the Hardys and the Dudleys, and it was like, dude, you don't fit anymore. Yeah. And that's what
this feels
like.
Well, that's my issue with it. My issue has nothing to do with the story. It's just that the match isn't going to be all that good, and the Shield could have a great match if you pair him with somebody that can go. I would rather they be in a tag title match with the Real Americans or the Rhodes and the Usos in a Four Corners match, or against the two Wyatts that are left over than this. I mean, I'm sure they'll win, but I just don't see it being very good a match.
Yeah, but Jordan said that point, and, you know, I'm starting to think he was right. It's better that they didn't break him up at WrestleMania or break him up leading up to it. The only other thing they could have done is have Kane, and I thought about this, Kane, in spite of the Shield, say, well, the only way I can get you out of my, get this thorn out of my side is to have you wrestle each other. That was the only other thing I think they could have done.
Yeah.
But they already have one triple threat, so...
Exactly. Yep. You don't want to over multi-man it. Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Go ahead, Ben.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's kind of interesting. Basically, every tag team was rumored to be splitting. Coming into WrestleMania, it looks like none of them are now. Right. So.
Yeah. Because I think what happened is they realized having all those singles matches, now that you have probably two Daniel Bryan matches, was going to overdo the card. So now they've kind of put it all in maybe about two or three different segments, which hurts a little way, but at least some wrestlers can go out there in the Battle Royal and say, hey, I was a part of WrestleMania. Did I do a lot? Probably not. But I was a part of WrestleMania.
Yeah. So we'll see how the rest of the card shapes up, and obviously within a couple weeks we'll know for sure what the full
not a total fleshing out yet.
Probably. Yeah. I was going to talk some TNA while we have a few minutes. I guess their next pay-per-view is Sacrifice, which is on April 20th.
Play the song again.
Yeah. No, we can't. TNA can't afford it.
All right. They probably could afford Scott Stapp at this point.
Yeah. Well, yes.
The only thing is Sacrifice.
Give him the TV title.
Yeah, give him the TV. Give Scott Stapp the TV title.
Does Devon still have that? I don't.
Yeah, at his house.
Yeah, because he got fired
I don't think that's even a title anymore, is it?
It's like the Legends title.
Abyss had it the last time I watched it. But anyway, their next pay-per-view is Sacrifice, which is April 27th. By the way, speaking of TNA, take a read to Nate Milton's Impact reviews on PlaceToBeNation.com. He does a fantastic job, so keep tabs on that when you see it. Bad time for TNA, sadly. Nobody cares about Dixie Carter. Nobody cares about MVP. Now Bobby Lashley's back. Nobody cares. Sad thing is, I love Magnus. I loved the one year I did the TNA Impact reviews. I love Magnus. I think he's my favorite guy in the company. Magnus and James Storm,
aka Mickey James's baby daddy.
Yeah. So I dig Magnus and I dig James Storm. I can't see either of them being in WWE, but does Lashley do anything? Like, why come back? What do you think of that? Reesh, does bringing Lashley back do anything for this company?
In terms of, like, the product itself and moving the needle in terms of popularity, no, it doesn't really do anything. Bobby was part of the Lost Generation in 2006 and 2007 that just floundered in the youth movement. You know, they'd had him in TNA before, so to make it out like Bobby Lashley coming to TNA is a big deal is kind of silly, because he had already worked there in 2000, like, I think, 9 and 10. So I guess, you know, the MMA career just didn't go anywhere, just like Batista's, and he just kind of floated his way back. But I didn't watch the segment he had on Lockdown. From what I heard, they didn't even have a match. It was just him beating down was it Rockstar Spud or was it Derek or was it
EC3.
He beats him down in the cage and EC3 escapes, and now they had a match on Impact that was taped. So I don't know where they're going to go. I don't think it really does anything. It just, all it does is hurt their bank account. The only thing being sacrificed is their bank account right now.
What do you think, Ben?
Lashley is just one of the worst signings they could have done. I like the MVP signing. like I said, because I think he brings something to the table. Because he's unselfish, he can talk, he can be an authority figure. What Lashley's a terrible signing. He's going to demand too much money. They'll probably have to cut more guys who are actually good to make space for him. And he's like, you know, yeah, a few weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, Rich and I were talking about, oh, it's so exciting, they got all these young guys, they got Magnus, they got EC3, they got Gunner, they have the Wolves, this is looking really good. And it's just like, it's like they heard us. And we're like, not so fast, young man. We're bringing Bobby Lashley in to shut you up, and we're going to put Jeff Hardy in a mask.
And we're going to dress him like that creepy thing in Insidious.
Oh, God, it's terrible. So, yeah, I don't know. This is the definition of one step forward, 500 steps back. I've turned on TNA so quickly, and it's very sad.
I can't lie. I did not watch Impact. I did not even watch the actual recap or the show Lockdown. I read the recap, and maybe someone can elaborate on it, but I heard the ending to the Joe Magnus match was extremely bad, even by TNA standards.
Yeah,
It ended, just to clarify, it ended with Abyss coming out of the ring and taking Joe under, and then I don't know what he did. He may have, like, I don't know what he did. And he brings him back up, and then Magnus beats him.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's the same as what Undertaker used to do. Yeah.
I can't believe it. JD, any thoughts?
Yeah, if they want to bring in a muscular black guy, just bring back Monty Brown. He's a lot cheaper.
Love Monty Brown, baby.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, that's a TNA guy, too, you know? Why not?
But if he comes back with a Marcus Corvon music, that's even better. You're going down, down, down. Love that theme. Willie, any thoughts on Lashley?
No, I don't want to talk about Lashley.
All right, good.
Let's just not. I'll talk about TNA. There's three things. I'm actually thinking about writing with them on the high spot about them in the high spot tomorrow, because I think they're kind of a casualty of the network of starting up.
Mm-hmm.
I was into their tapings that they did from England. I thought they were exciting. I liked the look at them. I was excited about some of these newer guys who I haven't seen before that they were bringing in from Mexico and Japan, which did remind me of kind of what my favorite time period of TNA, where they were doing like the World X Cup and bringing in like Yoshino and Doi from Dragon Gate and for a couple shows. And I think it was like Sonata's the X Division champion right now, and I've never seen him wrestle. I've never seen Tigre Uno wrestle. And I wanted to see it. And between just regular TV having so much stuff on Thursdays, so many other things that I can watch on the network, like NXT, it's just kind of an afterthought right now. And the other thing that I was talking with my friends about TNA today, because they're coming to Wisconsin for the first time in like 5 years. They're going to be in Racine, Wisconsin. And all of you are going to say, what? What is that? That is like this community that is kind of in between Milwaukee and Chicago. It's like they can't like figure out which one they want to do, and they think that they're going to get people from both. But what's actually going to happen is they're going to get people from nowhere. Like they've been on presale for tickets for a couple weeks, and there's front row tickets still available for this house show. It's just kind of just bad decisions all over the place for them, I was on, you know, I think a couple episodes ago, I was really excited about where they were going, just like what Ben was saying. And I just don't have the time, really, to even look at them. I've been burned so many times by them that there's other things to look at.
Who's going to be the biggest beneficiary of Bobby Lashley signing with TNA? Is going to be Ring of Honor, because they're about to probably pick up some very valuable free agents, I have a feeling.
And I was going to mention the same thing with Steve, because he was talking about Wrestle One, the promotion in Japan that signed a deal with TNA, and they've had a lot of their talents imported. But Steve could probably elaborate more, like Ben was talking about Ring of Honor. They made a deal with another Japanese promotion
that is going to be
pretty influential.
What is that, Steve?
That they are going to be with New Japan Pro Wrestling, who's pretty much one of the hottest promotions on the planet for 2013. I've heard that they've stepped down a little bit since then. They've really kind of taken more of a storyline approach as opposed to straightforward wrestling. And then other available too on pay-per-view. I've seen a couple of their events, and it's huge for Ring of Honor. They're going to do two shows in May. The one in New York's already sold out, And that's been a big knock on Ring of Honor for, I'd say, before August of this year. They had, you know, kind of a dry spell. I kind of fell off of watching them a little bit too, and everyone wanted to go back to the Gabe Sapolsky era, and they would bring in a couple Dragon Gate guys. They'd bring in, like, Kenta from Japan. The amount of guys that are coming in far exceed any of that they've ever done. They've already announced, like, five guys. They announced Jushin Liger today.
Wow.
It's a huge deal, and they're bringing in AJ Styles for that show. I think it's a risk in a way, because they're going to have to put forward a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, and this is strictly conjecture on my part, that maybe New Japan is helping pay a little bit, because maybe this is their way of getting a little more eyes on their product in the United States. So maybe they're helping out in that way.
You know what? It's the blueprint for how a company that's not WWE should be operating in the U.S.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly.
Like, the risks they're taking are totally worth it.
It is further proof to me, like I had said in the article I wrote about TNA a month or so ago, that it's a long argument. We don't have time to talk about it, but I think Ring of Honor is now the number two promotion in North America. I think they've almost sealed it.
I agree. I think so too.
And also, he was talking about how they're going to be booking those big shows up in the Northeast. The fact that Ring of Honor can go to the Hammerstein Ballroom and sell it out and have pretty great shows that everybody fawns over, and the fact that TNA is paying out of their own pocket $300,000 to book this damn arena, and they might – I don't know. Ben's been to the Base Brawl events, but I don't know if they can sell out Hammerstein Ballroom. I don't know if the fan base is there.
I don't know.
What were the crowds like at PCU Park, Ben? The Doctor and I have tried to go the last couple years, and schedules just never worked out for us, but how have the crowds been for those Brooklyn shows?
You know, I hate to say it because it was such a good show, but the crowd was not huge. They did not fill the place. They didn't even come close.
Well, it's funny you say that because 2 years ago or 3 years ago, him and I and his wife and a couple other people, we went to a Cyclones game the night after, and the service sucked. And I talked to, like, the ushers and the concessions, and they're like, yeah, we just got overwhelmed. Apparently the crowd – this was 2000 – it's probably 2011. Mm-hmm. Might have been the first year they did it, which was probably 2011. And apparently it was very successful because they ran out of forks. They were selling Caesar salads without forks. What is this, Cro-Magnon times?
Are we in Crimea?
Yeah. They got, like, overwhelmed. Now, the last couple of years, I've heard that it's kind of died down, and that's a bummer. But
all I know is that we took a lot of – I was there with Marvel doing some interviews, and we took a lot of footage, and we ended up having to edit a bunch of it out because we didn't want to show the empty seats.
Wow.
Because we knew we were sending the video back to TNA.
Nothing was worse, though, than the wide shot of Bound for Glory. In San Diego. Yeah. That was there's more people on this show.
The one they had in San Diego. The one they had for lockdown that came out was pretty bad. Yeah. They had nobody in the seats up at the seat level. It was very just to finish up that point, if TNA pays, you know, you know 30% of $1 million to try to book this place in the East Coast, and they get completely washed out ticket sales wise by Ring of Honor's New Japan Super Shows, that is really, really, that looks really bad. And then you got Jeff Jarrett's promotion on the cusp of being announced within about a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love Jeff Jarrett. I don't know.
That could be 30% of $1 million too that they are spending.
I was trying to put it into my head. I'm like, that is a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
for nothing. Yeah. For nothing. It's like Bobby Lashley, a lot of money for nothing.
For a lot of nothing, yeah. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Our time is up. I'd like to thank all of you once again for joining me on the main event. 2 weeks, guys. It is our WrestleMania preview. Ben Steve, you will not be with us. You will be en route to the Crescent City.
Correct, but I look forward to listening to the show.
Yes, we
during
will
WrestleMania week.
I also have a special. We have a special guest. I already have him lined up. I'm not telling anybody who it is.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Exactly. We're all doing fucking yoga for our thighs. No, it's gonna be a fun show. WrestleMania. We'll go over the card. We'll go over the Hall of Fame, and an announcement. Another thing I just saw on WrestleChat.net. In the past, the WrestleMania pre-show started at 6.
Oh,
this
yeah.
year, starting at 5.
God damn it. Now I got to get even earlier parking.
2 hour pre-show on the network. Wow.
Yep. Because if I have to stalk Renee Young, now I have to get there at 10 o'clock instead of 12 o'clock.
Yes, you do.
Damn it.
Well, I know what direct message I'm sending when I get off this podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Here's who to look out for.
Yep. So we'll be back in 2 weeks for our WrestleMania preview. Mr. Willie, Mr. Duncan, Mr. Reish will be back. And we'll have a special guest with sitting in Ben's seat. But it's been a great, it's been an honor tonight for Andrew Reish, Jordan Duncan, Ben Morse, Steve Willie. I am Scott Criscolo. You've once again been in the main event. Triple H doesn't think you deserve it, but I do. See you in 2 weeks.
Thighs.
Listening. Hail to the victors. Go Blue. Yeah, 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 yeah. Keeping the faith. Matador boots, only flag brothers had them with a Cuban heel. Iridescent socks with the same color shirt and a tight pair of chinos. Oh, I put on my shark skin jacket, you know the kind with the velvet collar and bitty bop shades. Oh yeah. Took a fresh pack of Luckies and a mint called Simpson. My old man's Trojans and his old spice have the shade. My hair in a pompadour, like the rest of the Romeos wore a permanent wave. Yeah, we were keeping the faith. Yeah, 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 keeping the faith. You can get just so much from the good thing. The good old days weren't always good, and tomorrow ain't as bad as it seems. Learn stickball as a formal education. Lost a lot of fights, but it taught me how to lose. Okay. Oh, I heard about sex, but not enough. I found you could dance and still look tough anyway. Oh, yes, I did. I found that a man ain't just being macho. An awful lot of late night driving food. Drank a lot of take home pay. I thought I was the Duke of Earl when I made it with a red haired girl in the Chevrolet. Oh yeah, we were keeping the faith. Yeah, 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 keeping the faith. You know the good old days weren't always good. Tomorrow ain't as bad as it seems. I told you my reasons for the whole revival. Now I'm going outside to have an ice cold beer in the shade. Oh, I'm gonna listen to my 45s. Ain't it wonderful to be alive when the rock and roll plays? Yeah, when the memories stay. I'm keeping the faith. Yes, I. You know I'm keeping the faith. Oh, yes, I. You know I'm keeping the faith. Oh, you know I'm keeping the faith.